Welcome to the podcast, How to Run and Grow Your Solo Patent Practice with Anant Kataria and Fez Wahid of Sagacious IP. This is a one-of-its-kind podcast focused on existing and aspiring solo or small patent practitioners, interviewing successful solo or small patent practitioners and bringing to you proven, actionable insights to start, build, and grow your patent practice. Learn firsthand how to acquire, serve, and retain clients for long-term success. All this while effectively juggling the multiple roles that one has to play as a solo or small patent practitioner. If you run a solo or small patent practice or are planning to start one, whether you're currently in a mid-size or big law firm or coming fresh out of law school, this podcast series will help you learn from the successful ones who have faced and overcome the challenges you are dealing with. So let's get into the podcast with your hosts, Anant Kataria and Fez Wahid.
Welcome to today's episode of Solo Patent Practitioner Podcast. Our guest for today is Joshua Mertzluft, a registered patent attorney, mechanical engineer, former editor-in-chief of Buffalo Law Review, a political leader, and an internationally ranked oralist in the Philip C. Jessup International Moot Court. He is the founder of Mertzluft Law PLLC and runs his practice from Buffalo, Niagara Falls area, New York. Josh loves helping inventors, entrepreneurs, and creators in securing protection for their inventions, brands, and creative works. He has experience working with startups, small businesses, large companies, independent inventors, and universities on an array of domestic and international IP matters. So let's take the conversation forward with Josh and learn from his experience of being a solo patent practitioner. Hi, Josh. Welcome to our podcast.
Hi, Anant. How are you doing today?
Great. Thank you. How are you?
I'm well. I'm glad to be on and happy to share some insight from a brief little time that I've been running a solo practice here.
Perfect. So Josh, as a standard practice, we start with getting an introduction about you, about your firm. So that would be great if we start with you telling us a bit about you and your practice.
So my practice started out here in New York doing primarily patent prosecution. Prior to my time going solo here, I worked at an Am Law 200 firm, and I was doing patent prosecution there. I decided to go solo and launch a practice and start to get more involved with, you know, small businesses, startup companies, and really help inventors and innovators in the area and across the country really kind of gear their patent strategies towards growing their business and thriving. And that's, you know, kind of the founding philosophy of Mertzluft Law PLLC is we, you know, we work as almost business partners with our clients, you know, so that they're able to thrive and they're able to get on the right track with patent protection. We take an emphasis on education and communication, and you know, we make those our top priority through the entire process with our clients.
Perfect. So you said you worked with an AM 200 law firm before you went solo. So what made you choose to go solo, or, you know, set up this practice?
Well, one of the pieces of it was the timing worked out well personally, actually, with my wife and her position. And I know that that's a huge question that a lot of people have when trying to make a determination about going into a solo practice, whether it be in patent law or whether it be in another area of law, is whether your situation supports it. And, you know, it worked out, you know, with our family, with my wife and I having some conversations and deciding to pull the trigger on it and decide to go forward. You know, one of the reasons that I got into law in the first place was to be able to focus on the business aspect of law and to be able to network, to be able to you know, work directly with clients, to be able to help businesses in a more personal way. And I really think that's something that being at a solo small firm allows me to do. And that's one of the reasons why, you know, why I decided to start this up and go solo.
Oh, perfect. Yeah, it's quite right from my understanding. As you said, you know, being a solo practitioner helps you be more connected to your customers and be able to network more and actually, yeah, run law firm as a business instead of just working on law. Yeah, that's great. I think that's a good point for our audience as well. When you started, if you could spot and identify, what would be the top challenges, or let's say top three challenges you experienced in the solo practice?
Oh, there's certainly more than three. I think the first challenge, if I have to pick three, and I think it's probably wise to limit it there, but to pick the top challenges, you know, I think one of the first ones is getting into the actual process of setting up a law firm practice as a business. I know in New York State, and it, you know, it works similar ways across the country, but obviously in each state it's different, and you know, in different countries it's different too. But in New York State in the U.S., we have a process where you have to decide what format of a firm you want. You know, I ended up going with a limited liability company, and then you have to, of course, get all the paperwork in. Well, that's something that, you know, when you're in practice with a larger firm, you may do on behalf of a client, but when you're going and doing it on your own behalf, it definitely seems like it's a different process. There's quite a bit of waiting that happens through it. And I think that was one of the first challenges, was getting all of the initial paperwork in order to get the practice going. You know, obviously if you're a business attorney, corporate attorney, normally you do this stuff all the time, but you know, as a patent practitioner, it's not something you see very often. So that I thought was a first challenge. Thankfully, at this point, well past overcome. Another challenge that definitely faced getting started was setting up the infrastructure for taking in clients, managing scheduling, and you know, keeping client matter separate. Because when you work at a large firm, most of those things are generally decided by your IT department or the board of the firm, if it's maybe a smaller firm. But you know, when you're starting a solo practice, you know, you are the IT department, you are the board, you have to make all these decisions. And getting that infrastructure started up, and oh, by the way, you're also starting a practice, so you know, you have to keep your eye on your P&L statement and your budget and your cash flow. All of that has to factor in as well. You know, you can't go ahead and get, you know, necessarily the enterprise level client and matter management software that, you know, you'd see at your typical AmLaw 200 firm. But, you know, what you have to do is you have to learn about the solutions that are available for smaller firms and that are actually within a price point that you can afford and still provide excellent service to your clients using them. And I think the third challenge, if I were to pick a third and settle on a third, would probably be the timing, frankly, of when I did start the firm. I launched in February of this past year in 2021. And obviously, we're still dealing with the effects of COVID-19. Starting a firm, you know, typically what you do is you would, you know, go and meet everybody and anybody that you can, whether it be one-on-one, whether it be, you know, going to networking events, getting the name out there, getting business cards out there as much as possible. But obviously with COVID-19, that has been different. There haven't been as many, you know, in-person type events going on, especially here in New York. And it's, you know, I've largely had to rely on a lot of one-on-one meetings, meeting with people via Zoom, via Microsoft Teams, these type of virtual programs that you can use to meet. Also, getting involved with the community is a little tougher when you don't have those big networking events going on. So you have to really look and dig and find. They're out there, but they're, you know, there's not as many as there normally would be. So I think that was definitely a challenge, getting things underway.
Yeah, I can, all three points, so very, very good points. I think I can empathize with them. I'm sure the audience will also find it interesting. So just to give you a brief idea, the audience, the kind of people who listen to our podcast are probably, you know, what you were in, let's say, December of last year or January of last year, maybe a month or two before actually jumping on your own solo practice. So getting to know the exact challenges that they're going to face when they start is very important for them. So I can totally empathize with the point you said when, you know, you are the IT, you are the board, you are the one who has to decide what IT infrastructure you're going to have, what tool you are going to have, and then whether the same tool that you were used to having at AM 200 law firm, you know, is that something that you can still have it? Is it still affordable, or do you need to go out and look for tools that are more pertinent to your current size and current practice. Absolutely. These are very real challenges when the rubber hits the road. So how did you overcome those challenges? You know, I'm sure we're talking now and I looked at your website and the way you created that, that's very interesting, very good. So I believe you had overcome these challenges and, you know, our audience would also like to know how you did that.
Yeah, so I think the biggest piece of advice to overcoming challenges of starting a practice that I could give to lawyers, especially to patent practitioners who, you know, haven't really been involved too much in the aspects of running a business necessarily, is that you have to learn how to make decisions and to be able to stick with those decisions. You know, as lawyers, our tendency is to spin our wheels, to try and think about every possible way that something could go wrong and every, you know, angle that we could take around a problem. And that's something that we're good at. We're trained to think like that. But when you're running a business, you don't necessarily have time to be able to do that. You don't have the time to get, you know, your website to 100% ready. Sometimes you have to say, listen, we're going to get to 80%. We're going to make sure that it's ethically compliant. We're going to make sure that it's effective in delivering what we need to deliver to our clients, and we need to press launch. So, you know, the ability and the willingness, you're going to be starting a solo practice, you're going to be starting really any business, you know, you've already, you know, committed to the idea, you know, and made and accepted the idea of taking risks. But getting into the actual, you know, the daily decisions that you need to make, you know, learning and training, you know, kind of retraining yourself to be able to make decisions and stick with them, I think was probably the biggest thing that went the longest way to help overcome the problems that you face starting off.
Yeah, that's a good advice. So it's like in software terminology, the minimum viable product that you have, you've got to get that out. Instead of waiting to get to the perfection first.
Yeah. And obviously let your legal work shine and be your, you know, what you can refer to as your excellent work. But, you know, it's like the side things. You don't need to have the picture just right on your homepage, on your website. You know, save the excellence and the perfection for your legal work and, you know, let your business, you know, actually grow by making decisions at the right time.
Got it. That's great. So in the initial stages, then how did you generate business? So what all activities did you do to actually get business? I think it's especially hard when you're just starting out.
Yeah, it is hard because, and especially, you know, talking about COVID, and I think it's going to hopefully get a little bit easier as the, you know, the world starts to really open back up here. But in normal times, the, you know, the three ways to start generating business is network, network, and network. And once you do have clients coming in, do good work for those clients and the referrals will come. And, you know, it's something that takes some time, you know, so obviously if you're going to be starting a solo practice, don't expect to be making your revenues in the first month unless you already have a book of business that you're starting with. And, you know, be able to take the time to nurture relationships, to invest in people, to give something to other people, to give value away, even, you know, for free. And I know what we do is, you know, my firm has a, you know, a 6-page guide on patents that we publish that we, you know, just give away to everybody for free. And it, you know, kind of outlines, you know, what a patent is, how do you get one, what is the process look like, you know, how does it fit into, you know, business ideas, obviously all at a high level, but we're willing to give that away for free. And, you know, if you're able to give something that's actually valuable, then, you know, people will remember your name. And when, even if it's not the person that you talk to, you know, a particular networking event, maybe somebody that they know says, hey, I got an invention that I think I kind of want to talk to a patent attorney about. Do you know one? And then they can say, yes, I know one. Here's their information. Go talk to him or her and they'll be able to help. So that's kind of what you need to do when you're nurturing those relationships and growing the business.
That makes a lot of sense. This idea about giving something of value for free that lets people know about you and associate that feeling or associate that context of, you know, this person delivered value to me already. So they kind of have that connect already. And yeah, I think it makes sense. Yeah. And as you also mentioned in the conversation that, you know, as a solo practitioner, you play many roles. You wear many hats. You are the IT guy, you are the board. And then even that's the business side, but even on the actual working side, again, you are the paralegal, you are the attorney, you are the draftsperson, you're everything. So how did you juggle between these roles and and how did you, you know, did you have a support system of any kind that helped you sail through this?
Yeah, it's definitely tough to wear the hats. You could be working on some patent claims 1 minute and then get an email from, you know, whoever's providing your email saying that, you know, the server's down the next minute, or that there was an error delivering the last message. And these are things that you have to be able to switch back and forth on tasks rapidly. And, you know, obviously be able to ensure that you're delivering the best value for your clients, which is, of course, as a law practice, the top goal. But you're absolutely right, Anant. You have to have a support system there. And obviously, you know, you're not able to, you know, necessarily share your legal, what your, you know, your legal issues with other people due to client confidentiality rules. But talking to other, you know, other solo practitioners or other small firm practitioners about how to run a business, you know, they've been there. They have the wisdom. They've, you know, had the successes. They've made the mistakes. They can tell you, they can help guide you through the process. I think it's important to find some mentors early on, both within and without the legal profession, to be able to help you go through this process of starting a business. So I would say mentorship is key, and having those people around you.
Yeah, I think that's a very interesting insight. So I've personally experienced it when we were at a stage at Sagacious where we were kind of, you know, every step we had to take was like an experiment, you know, will it work and will it not work? And with our limited understanding of being in the business, we also were very doubtful, very uncertain about each step. And at that time, having a mentor who could at least help us help prioritize things or rank things, you know, okay, you know, you can do all these, both of these things, but this one has these pros and these cons, and this one has these pros and these cons. Then at least if we had to decide for ourselves, we had more inputs to decide. And it's very valuable. It's like having a guide with you. So I totally appreciate that suggestion. And could you also share if there's a way that you would recommend people to go about looking for such mentors? Is there something that you did per se to get such mentors? And if there is any idea or any thought there, I think people will appreciate that.
I think that one of the things that I did, at least to find other, you know, solo or small firm mentors, was to join the committee on my local bar association for solo and small practice. So that actually, just by joining that, going to a couple of the meetings, I met, you know, several practitioners either had gone through the process or who were starting the process. They weren't doing patent law necessarily, but that part was okay, because what I needed is I needed help on the business end. So they were able to kind of mentor me through that process and this thing going. The other place that you can find mentors is looking to your local business community. And, you know, you may already know people, you may have, you know, friends or family that are involved with it. And don't be afraid to ask. You know, I'm trying to figure out how to use this accounting software, and I heard you use, can you help me? Or, you know, do you use QuickBooks, that type of thing? Or maybe say, hey, you know, I heard you're running a business. I just wanted to see what you're doing for email. You know, I'm trying to make a decision on, you know, whether I want to go with, you know, Microsoft, Google, or whoever else. What do you like and what do you don't like? Those are things that you can just ask people. And, you know, one thing that I've learned, both in my practice of working with, you know, startups and small business owners, and, you know, the mentorship through the community, is that people love to talk about what they're doing. They love to talk about their business, and they love when, you know, you actually are genuinely interested, which is really easy to do when you're trying to figure out how things work. And who knows? I mean, maybe someday, you know, some of those contacts will turn into clients for you. I wouldn't go into it with that, you know, looking for that, but it may very well happen.
Yeah, this is good. And this is, when you told it sounded like so simple, so organic. It's just that you have to let go of, you know, what's stopping you from talking to people and asking for help, and just go and do that. And yeah, there are people who are willing to help, willing to share what they've. That's like so simple and so profound.
Exactly. So and you probably, I was gonna say, you probably saw the same thing with Sagacious when you were getting it started.
Yeah, absolutely. We went to conferences. Thankfully, we were able to at that time. It was not COVID, and we met people who were like at law firms or who had run similar businesses or some other kind of outsourcing businesses, and people were happy. They would see, okay, these guys are, you know, it's a small business. They are venturing out. They are having booths at these conferences, and they were willing to appreciate that. And then, you know, at times openly ask, you know, is if you need any support, you can always call me. And then we took on a couple of such offers. We called people and it was great. One of them has been our advisor since 2012, and he's on our board of advisors. And that has, I can't, you know, state how much impact that has brought to Sagacious. So I'm totally pro this approach. And so Josh, moving further, now I have a question about, you know, your website. I went to your website and I really liked it. It's just as this conversation. It's simple and then it's transparent. So I could see that if I was an inventor or someone who was seeking such services, I would go there. So I see that, you know, it's less, I would say, bragging, more answering my questions. So if I have a question about, you know, I want this kind of IP, what does a utility give me? What does a provisional application give me? What does a design application give me? How much it will cost? How much time it will take? And all those things, I could see that there was a very simple chart you had there. And, you know, and then there was a way for me to transparently look at what the price was. So I think that it looked really good to me, very useful to me. So how has your experience been? Two things. So what got you to, have such a thing on your website? I don't think many practitioners usually are very transparent about the pricing at this stage for whatever reasons. And second, have you seen any benefit of having it this way?
So I think that's early, one of those early decisions that I was talking about earlier in the podcast that you have to make, is you have to decide what your philosophy of advertising is going to be. Because, you know, if you're working at a large firm, there's not really much advertising that you personally have to do. There's a lot, you know, there's obviously, you know, you bait in what the firm's doing, you do some, you know, networking on behalf of the firm, but, you know, for a large part, you know, as far as websites go and all that, somebody else is taking care of that. When you're solo, of course, has been the theme of this podcast, you wear all the hats. So one of the decisions that you have to make is whether you're, you know, going to set up your advertising scheme so that, you know, you're driving people to talk to you to find a quote, you know, whether you want to have a full invention disclosure meeting before you're able to give someone even a ballpark estimate, or whether you want to just, you know, give a flat fee, things like that. Those are some early decisions you got to make. So obviously early on, checking out our website, it's pretty obvious what direction we took. You know, I've run enough invention disclosure meetings throughout my time practicing that, you know, I know that there's a set of questions that inventors always have right off the bat. And some of those questions are questions that come up during the call. But as a practitioner, you know, you generally know what they're going to be. You know, people who don't have experience with the patent process at all, you have to explain the process. You have to explain how it works, how each type of patent, whether it be a utility patent, a design patent, or a provisional application, you have to explain what each of those are. So the approach that I decided to take was to be upfront with all that and put all that on my website. So when you go to our website, you're going to be greeted with, you know, information presented simply on the homepage that kind of gives you a very, very, very high level each type of IP. And then what you can do is you can dig deeper and get into, you know, I have a blog that I'm starting to get going here to give some more information. And we also have a pricing page, a decision that is rare to see, especially among larger firms. So I decided to say, you know what, we're going to put our base pricing up on the website, and that will, at least, you know, from a client's perspective, help get the sticker shock concept out of the way a little bit, so that, you know, people can kind of get an understanding of what it's going to cost without having to go through a meeting with you, which, you know, for many startups, and, you know, if you think about your clientele, for many startups, that's a big barrier to find the time to set up a meeting, to talk to a patent practitioner, just to find out, you know, plus or minus $1,000, how much this process is going to cost us. So I put that up there so that people can have that as a reference. The dividends that it pays is, you know, of course, on our pricing page, we put, you know, schedule a consult, but right underneath each item, you know, I've already seen requests for consult come in straight from that page. So, you know, people are able to see the price, they're able to see what they'll get for the price, and then they're able to say, okay, I want to talk to this attorney. And that's already happened several times since we put that up on the page in July. The next phase that we're actually working on, and that I'm kind of a little bit of a secret, but I guess I'll share it here, is I'm working on a tool that will enable people to get a quote for their patent application. You know, obviously your base price is going to be different. You have your base price, which may apply to like a mechanical invention, you know, like article of manufacture type of invention. But obviously if you're doing software, or if you're doing, you know, some sort of blockchain or cryptocurrency type invention, you know, that price is going to be different from that base price. right? If you're trying, there's really no way to cut around it that if trying to write a software patent application for the cost of a mechanical provisional patent application, it's just not going to work as it, from a business standpoint. But what this tool will do is it will enable people to basically get a quote and find out, you know, hey, I have a software startup. I'm thinking about patenting our core function. How much would it cost? So this tool will enable people to be able to get that number. And again, you know, make a decision there whether they want to go forward with the meeting or not. So, you know, our philosophy has been transparency upfront, education upfront. You know, obviously other practitioners' philosophy will be, you know, talk to me first type of thing. But it really depends on what your personal style is. You know, as a solo practitioner, you're in charge. It's your ship. So you need to find the way that works best for you.
Right. I think in a way, it's advantageous for you as well as for the inventors or prospects who get to your website. So it's like a pre-screening. So there are people who maybe who are not willing to invest money right now. They're just at an exploring stage. So you probably don't want to have an invention consult or an IDF, you know, discussion with them anyways. So you have that information right there. The pricing is there. You also have information about what, you know, the basic question that anyone has at that stage, you're answering that on your website. So if you're not getting a consultation schedule there, probably, you know, even if there was a consult, it would not have moved forward positively. So that's a screening that's happening and you're still answering the question for the people who are visiting. And then the people who still schedule a consult, I think they are pre-qualified. They are there, they know the pricing. Now they're actually there to talk to you and work with you on the next stages. So I think it's probably a good idea.
You're exactly right there about the pre-screening. That it makes a huge difference when people come into the conversation, you know, kind of knowing ballpark what it will cost, you know, what's included in the services.
Yeah, perfect. So Josh, you know, it was a nice conversation. I really like the ideas you shared about when you started, the challenges you faced, overcame those challenges, how, you know, you valued mentorship, you know, giving things for free, things of value for free to people who you want to come and talk to you. And these are all good nuggets. I'm sure the people who listen to this podcast would be taking up these insights and, you know, adding them into their practice or, you know, helping making decisions based on this. But let's say if, as we come to the close of this podcast, if you would like to give any one message or leave our audience with one golden nugget from your experience, what would that be?
I would say that if you feel a strong call to, you know, either make it the rest of your career to try solo practice or to even just for a time, then do it. It's worth it. It's rewarding. You know, the ability to, you know, be involved in the business side of law is immensely fulfilling. To be able to see, you know, your clients succeed is an incredibly fulfilling experience as a practitioner. So my advice is that if you feel called to do it, do it.
Perfect. That's great. Well, thank you so much for your inspiring talk, Josh. I'm sure what you've shared will help our listeners. And in case, you know, they have any questions for you, how can they contact you if you'd like to share something about that? That'll be good.
Sure. Yeah. So my email address is Joshua, J-O-S-H-U-A at mertzluft.law. That's mertzluft.law. Again, that's Joshua at mertzluft.law. Or you can call me anytime at country code 1-716-202-0495. I'd be happy to, you know, share some insights. I know I talked about finding mentors in the area of starting up solo practice. I'll always take the call.
Great. Thank you so much, Josh.
Thank you for listening to the podcast, How to Run and Grow Your Solo Patent Practice, with your hosts, Anant Kataria and Fez Wahid from Sagacious IP. If you enjoyed this episode, please do rate it and listen to more episodes in the series. For more information about supporting your practice with external resources, write to us at info@sagaciousresearch.com. Please do note that the contents of this podcast were intended for general informational purposes only. The views of the guests and hosts were their personal views and do not represent Sagacious IP. The facts of every legal matter are unique, and the content of this podcast should not be considered as offering legal advice for your specific legal situation. The preceding information may be considered attorney advertisement and does not establish an attorney-client relationship.